bump me. It got me pissed. But I just held back and waited. I knew my time would come. 4 years later, we were at the Laugh Factory. And the Laugh Factory is my house. I host there. I headline there. It's my home. So he tries to bump me off the show. They wouldn't bump me. Crybaby was like, yeah, whatever. Tiffany, you gonna go up there and bomb. You about to ruin this whole thing for everybody. You suck. You ain't no real comic. I was like, yes, I am a real comic, and I'm about to destroy this room, and you're going to have a hard time following me. Please, you about to eat ass. You about to bomb. Boy, you the only motherfucker overeating in this bitch. Right before I went on stage, I prayed to God to make me as funny as possible. If I'm never funny again, make me as funny as possible in this one moment so I could shut this motherfucker up, Lord. I did 15 minutes, demolished it. I got a standing ovation. 6 people stood up for me. It was great. I call that an ovation. I came off the stage, and all the comedians were clapping. They had heard Crybaby and me yelling back and forth at each other in the VIP area upstairs. So when I came off, they were all clapping for me like, yeah, nigga, you killed that. You did that, baby girl. And I was like, yeah, I did. And it was his turn to go up next. Crybaby was like, I can't believe this shit. You making me eat my words. And I was like, yep, eat them. Eat them up. Like you eat all them free sandwiches. So then he went on stage and he bombed bad. And then he came back upstairs. He came up, gave me a big old hug, and he was like, man, I'm so sorry, Tiffany. Obviously somebody tried to teach me a lesson. And I was like, yep. God trying to teach you today. Ever since then, we've been cool. You know how you can tell somebody can't stand you, but you're undeniable, so they can't really hate. That's how it's been ever since. So when I see him, he's always cool, like, yeah, I see your commercials. I see you doing those shows. I saw you on Oprah Channel. You can tell it's bothering him, but I'm always cool to him because he apologized and made his shit right. And I always forgive. I may not forget, but I will forgive anyone if the apology is sincere and I feel like his was sincere. Comedy is hard for anyone, but women have a different level of hard. So many promoters try to pull shit on women. I can't tell you how many tried to tell me that to get on stage, I had to get on my back. Hell no! I see young female comics now, and I can see the same thing happening. Dudes trying to take advantage of them, hold a little bit of power over their heads. I see that going on so much, and then I tell them, girl, don't let them pull your whole card. You'll get more if you keep your legs closed. Trust me. You'll get more stage time. You'll get more performances. Just keep your legs closed. And it's true. It is so funny because nobody told me that. I saw all these girls fucking all these dudes getting stage time, and I just felt like I'm probably ruining my career because I wasn't going to do that. But those girls aren't doing comedy no more. None of them. Those girls I started with that slept around, they all got kids or they quit. Or it's I become a social worker or I'm a nurse now because they were getting run through. And how long can that go on? They thought that was the way. And it's not. You can't get your comedy stripes on your back. You gotta earn them on your own 2 feet, cause you can't fake funny. This one promoter, he tried to fuck me. I said no. So he told everyone he fucked me in a car at the back of the comedy club. He told this lie to everyone. I found out he was saying all this, and I went straight hood. I stormed into the club where he was promoting at, right when all the comics were gonna be there. And I was like, what you say about me? I was in your motherfucking car? When was this? He was like, you wasn't in my car. Goddamn right I wasn't in your trashy, broke-ass hoopty. But you out here telling people I was in your car and you fucked me in that car? And that I was terrible in bed? No. I said that your attitude is terrible because somebody trying to be with you and you ain't trying to give nobody no time of day. Well, these niggas told me that you said that you fucked me in the back of your car. And I'm telling you right now, you need to keep my motherfucking name out your mouth. or I'll have these goons come up here and fuck you up. And I got all up in his face, and I pushed him. Mind you, this dude is 20 years older than me and probably 100 pounds heavier than me. You'll get fucked up in these streets. Keep my name out your mouth and don't say shit to me. That was 12 years ago. And to this day, when he sees me at the comedy club and tries to speak to me, I don't say shit to his ass. I've learned how to handle those type of situations better now. I don't make threats like that anymore. But at the moment, I had to save face. He was a bitch. He spread rumors about people that ain't true and gossip. And that's not funny. That shit has an impact. But sometimes my friends make threats for me. One time this promoter flew me and my friend Marlo up to Seattle. He was supposed to give us our money before we got on stage. He gave us half our money.
I'm gonna give you the rest when you get off.
We get off stage. We finish the show.
Okay, I'm gonna give you the rest of your money when we get to the hotel.
But we didn't go to the hotel.
Okay, we got to go to the casino right quick, and then I'm going to take y'all to the hotel.
So we at the casino. He buys us some drinks and runs off. And the next thing we know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Our flight's supposed to leave at 7 a.m. He's like,
oh, man, can I write you a check?
What? He was a reputable promoter, so we said, yeah, okay, write us a check. So he wrote us a check. Dropped us off at the airport. He had printed out our return tickets home. We went to check in, and no ticket, no flight, nothing. There's nothing for us to get home. So we start calling. We blowing up his phone.
He's like, what do you mean there's no ticket? There's a ticket.
I was like, motherfucker, we're not calling you because we want to talk. There's no fucking ticket. You sure we at the right airline?
Yes. My homegirl works at Southwest. She set me up. She doing everything. That's the only airline I use.
Turns out, homegirl canceled everything. Why? Because she caught him with another bitch the day before. He neglected to mention that shit about his homegirl. Marlo was having none of this. I don't know who Marlo called, but the next thing you know, an hour and a half later, the promoter showed up at the airport, and he paid cash for these tickets. And he gave us the rest of our money in cash. And he was like,
Marlo, please don't have that man call my phone no goddamn more. I don't want no problem. And I ain't never booking y'all for nothing again. Please just leave me alone and let me live my life.
And Marlo was like, yeah, motherfucker. We don't never want to do your shit again. Treating us like shit because we women. If we was men, you wouldn't have treated us like this, motherfucker. I never asked Marlo who she called. I just know Marlo's from Compton. And she knows a lot of motherfucking gangsters. She knows Suge, all of them. I don't know who she called, but I will tell you, this promoter had the fear of God in him. All this shows, it's really hard as a woman in comedy. But I don't want to make it out like all dudes is bad. Some guys are amazing, like Kevin Hart. He's like my comedy guardian angel. There was a time early in my comedy career when I was homeless. I was living in my GL Metro. I used to be homeless in Beverly Hills, and I thought, if I'm homeless, I'll be homeless with class. Keep my nails done, keep my hair pretty, baby wipes, I'm fresh, it's okay, I'm in Beverly Hills. As long as I'm sleeping in Beverly Hills, I'm safe. I pulled up to the comedy club one night, and Kevin saw all that stuff in my car. Kevin was like, what the fuck's going on with you? I was like, nothing. I'm good. I'm just in between houses. No. What the fuck is going on? I told him what was up. I cried and everything. I opened up to him. And he was like, Tiff, you can't be living like this. You're a pretty girl. Like, a beautiful woman. Why are you living in your car? Any dude will be happy to let you live in his house. And I was like, I'm not fucking for a roof. I fuck people to heal them, okay? I'm a healer. That's why I fuck. Not for no roof over my head. I got a car. I got a roof. Kevin said, Tiffany, you are crazy as fuck. You should not be sleeping in your car. Here's $300. Get yourself a hotel room for a week. That was so nice of him, and I should have been more appreciative, but I had to point something out. What? I can't get no hotel room nowhere for no week for $300. He told me to write out a list of goals I wanted to accomplish, like what I want out of life. I wrote the first thing on my list. I want my own apartment. The next day, I got a phone call from one of our mutual friends. Girl, there's an apartment for you. You should check it out. Kevin talked to some people. You should go check it out. I went to check it out, and like, it was whack. The neighborhood was terrible. There were crackheads everywhere. It straight looked like the Walking Dead set or something. I pulled up to the apartment building. There were bars everywhere. But I had this weird feeling. This place is secure. It's safe. I ended up taking the apartment, and I fixed it up. And I still have it. The neighborhood is actually really nice now. All thanks to my comedy guardian angel, Kevin Hart. Tiffany's True Hollywood Stories. Scientology. I think everyone who lives in LA has a Scientology story. Mine is pretty short. A lot of people think it's funny, but I didn't at the time. I kind of still don't. I don't remember how I found Scientology. They offered me a place to stay for free, and this was during the period I was living out of my car. They said they would give me $50 a month to live there, and they would help me become a superstar. That was cool and all, but I was really only interested in them because they told me they can take the hurt out of memories. I got some hurtful memories, that's for sure. They were trying to get me to go do that thing they do, where you talk about your bad memories as you hold these metal handles, and they give you little electric charges. You talk about what's making you so mad. I kept talking about my shit, and it was still reading high. They said, do it again, tell it again, tell it again. I must have told it 15, 20 times. The thing was still reading off the charts. They told me to try again the next day. Then they took me to the dorm. It was nothing but little white girls. I think the youngest one was 17 and the oldest one was 30. I was 23 or something. It was just me and them. They took me to where I was going to sleep. It was bunk beds. I was like, I can't live here. I don't do that. You need to find another place for me to sleep. And the Scientologist was like, no, Tiffany, this is where you sleep. It's very safe and I don't fuck with bunk beds, okay? Bad shit happens in bunk beds. I don't do that. Well, this is all we have after all. Hell no. I'm gonna be trapped. Y'all gonna let motherfuckers trap me? For what? $50 a month? That's how you gonna get me to sleep in a bunk bed? I don't think so, motherfucker. I'm out. I'm not a prima donna. Remember when I was in the orphanage in state custody? We had bunk beds. And that was where the beatings happened. Those older bitches used to beat my ass in a bunk bed. If somebody is beating you up and you get in the corner, you can't get out of there. If you're in the bottom bunk and they're beating your ass and there's walls on both sides, you cannot get out. There's no way out. You're trapped. You just get beat. I know it's not rational, but those bunk beds just triggered it for me. I was going to be trapped in there. These weirdos started talking about Scientology to me, saying, if you leave Scientology, you're breaking your bond. I went straight hood on them. I screamed up and down the hallways. You motherfuckers can't put me in a bunk bed to get my ass whipped for $50 a month. This is why there ain't no black people in this motherfucker as it is. Tiffany, please, you're going to have to go to the infirmary. Y'all said y'all was going to take the hurt from the memories. I'm still fucking hurt. So fuck you and fuck bunk beds. I know other people have problems leaving Scientology, but they let me the fuck out pretty quick. Will and Jada. I was shooting the movie Girls Trip in New Orleans, and Jada Pinkett Smith was in it with me. We got to become pretty good friends on set. One weekend, Will Smith was coming into town, and Jada invited me to dinner with her and Will. I got all dolled up in my best cheap dress to go to dinner with them at this restaurant called Le Petit Grocery. The place really lived up to its name. Despite being very expensive, it had very small portions of food. I ordered a short rib, and it's just like one rib, seriously. There's just a little morsel. There's one bite. I was like, where's the rest of the meat? Jada said, you can order as many as you want, Tiffany. It's okay. Is this how y'all rich people stay thin? Y'all eat like a bite of food and that's it? $30 for one bite? That's insane. They also had crazy expensive wine. I ain't into that. I asked the wine guy, do you have Barefoot Moscato? They did have it, and they were cool about bringing it to me, not snobby or anything. If you don't know, Barefoot is that wine they sell in a grocery store real cheap. You can laugh at me. God knows Jada and Will were laughing at me. Jada was like, oh man, Tiffany, it's you. It's you, Tiffany. It's you. And I was like, what's so funny? You ever had Barefoot? It's good. Jada's like, yes, I've had it. I love hanging out with you because you remind me of back when I was young and living in Baltimore, just getting started. You just remind me of the good old days. I thought, damn, your good old days must have sucked. She asked me what I was doing the next day because we had the day off from shooting. I was like, oh, I got me a Groupon, so I'm going on a swamp tour. Jada was like, who you going with? Girl, by myself. You going all by yourself? Yeah. I don't have no friends out here in Louisiana. I'm going by myself. Jada was like, well, maybe Will and I will go with you. Yeah, right. Y'all not going with me. No, we'll probably go with you. We'll call you tomorrow. We'll see. There was no chance Jada and Will were going with me on that swamp tour. I just ignored that shit, and we had a great time at dinner. The swamp tour was about 2 p.m., so right after breakfast, I got out my weed that I had brought in from L.A. Now, don't get all crazy. I have a prescription for this weed. I got real bad back pain, and my doctor agrees. I have a prescription, so be cool, okay? I smoked a little, right? It was like 12 o'clock. I was thinking to myself, oh, man, this swamp tour going to be so cool. I'm going to smoke this weed, and the alligator's going to be talking to me. The bird's going to sing. The raccoon's going to be waving at me and stuff. It's going to be like a Disney movie. It's going to be great. And then about 1 o'clock, Jada called me. I was high as a kite. Jada was like, hey, Tiffany, you still going on that swamp tour? Yeah, of course I'm going. Well, Will and I are going with you. I paused for a second in disbelief. Wait, you for real? You really going with me? Yes. Okay, cool. Don't even trip. Y'all Groupon is on me. I got y'all. Since y'all paid for dinner last night, I'm going to take care of you guys. Now it was Jada's turn to pause. What? She told me to come to their hotel and we would ride together. Don't worry. I got it. I'll be over to your hotel in an hour. I was like, oh, shit. So I started eating all the bread and drinking water, doing jumping jacks and freaking out. I got to sober up and be cool. An hour later, I pulled up to their hotel in my little $20 a day rental car that I got. I started to hand my keys over to the valet because I was thinking I'm going to ride with Will and Jada and their security in the SUV. And it's going to be all cool and stuff. Nope. Will came running out of our hotel like he's in Bad Boy 7. And he jumped in the backseat of my car. Will was like, whoa, it's been years since I've been in a regular car. Then Jada runs in behind him. Oh, my God. These windows aren't tinted. I don't know if I feel safe. And I was like, really, Jada? You're from Baltimore, bitch, like, for real? And Jada was like, oh, my goodness. Fine, let's go, right? And Will was like, yeah, let's go. We don't want to be late. So I started driving. The whole time I was thinking I was leaning back in the seat, driving all cool. But the next day, Jada told me I was up on the steering wheel. Of course I was up on the steering wheel, because all I could think was, you don't want to be the chick on TMZ that killed the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Be careful, Tiffany. Drive carefully. I was trying to play music for them. I was playing the radio, and Chris Brown came on, and it was a new Chris Brown song. And it was so funny, because Will was bobbing his head, and every time I looked up in my rearview mirror, it was like, Will Smith was in my rearview mirror smiling and bobbing his head. I was thinking to myself, this is fucking crazy. How could this be my life? Then Jada was like, who is playing on the radio? I said, oh, that's Chris Brown. You don't know who Chris Brown is? She was like, I don't listen to his music. All I listen to is Shaolin Monks. I started to laugh. I was like, what? Is that what rich people listen to? Monks? What the hell is she talking about? We pulled up to the Swamp Tour, and it was a lot of people out there waiting. Pretty much all of them, white people too. Jada was like, why are all these people here? I was like, they probably all got Groupons. Tiffany, what is a Groupon? What do you think it is? I think it means you got your own boat that you could take a group of people on. No, Jada, it's a discounted coupon that you can do activities with. Why would you think I have my own boat, Jada? Jada was like, Will, you got to go back to the hotel. Call security right now to come and get you and take you back to the hotel. Because this is going to be a problem. With all these people and stuff, you need to go home because it's going to be pandemonium. But I'm going to stay because they ain't going to recognize me. And Will was like, oh, no fear. How you going to invite me to the Swamp Tour and not let me go on the Swamp Tour? I want to go on the Swamp Tour. And I was like, yeah, Will, tell your wife. Y'all going to be safe. Y'all with me. Tiffany Haddish, ain't nothing going to happen to y'all. I got my backpack. Ain't nobody finna mess with us. We gonna see what's on this swamp. Jada was like, you got a backpack? See, I was trying to make it seem like I had weapons in my backpack, like I had it cracking. I was patting on my backpack like, we good, y'all. Like, ain't nobody finna mess with us. I'm from South Central LA. We finna have a good time. I promise y'all that. Like I said, I was high. It made no sense. Will was like, man, let's go. Let's just do it. I came all the way out here. I want to get on the Swamp Tour. And Jada was like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be okay. I don't know. And I was like, nobody's going to bother us. I promise you, ain't nobody going to bother us. I went in and got the tickets myself. And we were all set for one of the boats. I got Jada and Will out of the car, and we went to the boat. And nobody was saying nothing. This was 2016. Everyone was on their phones, right? Then this redneck dude with missing teeth yelled out, oh, shoot, that's Will Smith right there. And everybody on the boat noticed right as we were stepping on the boat. They started clapping. Everybody started hollering and cheering. I stepped on first, and I was like, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Thank you so much. And people literally yelled out, no, not you. Move out of the way. Will, Jada, oh, my gosh. And I was like, that's messed up. I'm the one who brought them. The redneck dude was like, hey, Will, what part of Philadelphia are you from? Will was like, West Philadelphia. Born and raised, right? Did you spend most of your days on the playground? Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Can I get a picture? Then a girl jumped up and she asked if she could get a picture. And somebody else asked if they could get a picture. And then Will stood up. And he was like, look, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Cajun Swamp Tour, not the Will Smith Tour. So let's enjoy ourselves, see what we can see. And once we're done on this tour, then maybe Jada and I will take pictures with you. Is that okay with everybody? Is that all right with everybody? Everyone cheered for him. I was all mad and jealous because he didn't even say anything funny. They were cheering and clapping and laughing. This is what fame and money does. I need to get some damn money. But it worked. We were just enjoying the Swamp Tour, and we learned about Nutria, which is the largest rodent. We learned about different birds in the swamp. It was really beautiful. We saw 6 alligators, and we got to feed marshmallows to the raccoons and alligators. It was really cool. Will kept asking the tour guide a bunch of questions and stuff, and everybody was loving that. Because Will Smith was talking. Near the end of the tour, Will was just sitting there, his legs crossed, like how rich guys cross their legs, the ankle on the knee so their balls can drop. And he was just sitting there, chilling. And then he said to me, man, Tiffany, this is beautiful. I know, right? I'm going to have to get me one of these. What, one of these boats? No, a swamp. What? I was thinking to myself, this nigga about to buy an ecosystem. I couldn't just let him top me, though. You know what? I'm going to buy me something, too.
He was like, what?
I'm going to buy me an iceberg, and I'm going to melt it into your swamp. Fuck all your complex ecosystem.
We'll start laughing. You're crazy, Tiffany.
I might be crazy, or maybe I'm just high as fuck.
Getting a Hollywood assistant. Another thing Will and Jada talked to me about was getting an assistant. They insisted that I hire one. They explained that having an assistant, giving somebody else the responsibilities of the smaller things, the day-to-day things that you would normally do, help you to be more focused on your art and your talent. Jada was like, Tiffany, you shouldn't be running the dogs to the groomers or taking your clothes to the dry cleaners. That's your assistant's job. They should be helping you with that. I was like, really? Yes. You need peace and quiet for your art. Your assistant should be screening calls so you don't have to be talking to everybody because you need your peace. It's very important to have your peace. I was like, I like peace and quiet. And she was like, if you have an assistant, then they can take a lot of the worry and stress off of you. Because the more successful you get, the heavier the workload gets. And the more normal things that you would do, you can't do anymore. Because you got other things to deal with. So give that responsibility to someone else. So I hired a dude to be my assistant. My lawyer wrote up the NDA, got it signed, and this guy worked for me for like a week. He was cool, very happy, and nice. I fired him right away. I just didn't feel comfortable with it. I don't know why. I feel like it's me giving up my power, and I can't give up my power. I work so hard to be independent and to have things for myself and to take care of myself. It's hard for me to let somebody else take care of me. Plus, I've been taking care of myself for so long. He didn't do anything wrong. It's just me. I got trust issues. One of my friends asked me why I felt this way. I think about it all the time. Part of it is my childhood and what I've been through. I could never really rely on anybody. I always had to do things myself. It's just hard changing those thought patterns, you know? And also, I had trust issues with people being in my personal stuff. For example, I shop a lot online. I don't want nobody telling me, geez, you're buying a lot of stuff from Amazon and Top Hatter. Why you got so many Groupons? Like, you're doing a lot of Groupon stuff. Why are you doing all this stuff? For example, I bought 2 cases of wine off Groupon because they had unicorns on the bottle. I bought sex toys on Amazon. I buy all kind of things that people think are stupid, and I'm tired of explaining myself. I guess I should explain that too. This was not my first attempt at hiring an assistant. I got baggage here as well. 2 years ago, my best friend was my assistant. She did part-time work for me, assistant type stuff. She was always in my business, criticizing me. She was like, oh my God, Tiffany, why did you buy this? And I would be like, shut up. I'm going to buy this stuff. I'll buy whatever I want to buy. But you're like wasting money on gadgets that barely work. Can you imagine having this conversation with someone? I don't want nobody telling me anything about how I spend my money. I had to let her go. She was getting to be like a mama. It all started when I shot this Tyler Perry series in Georgia. I needed help with getting a place to stay, learning my lines, and just getting settled in Georgia. One day I had been talking to her on the phone, and I was like, yeah, I gotta get somebody to help me find a spot out here. And she was like, I'll help you. Shoot, I'm not working right now. You should let me work for you. And I was like, cool, but I can only pay you like $400 a month. She was like, that's what's up. I'm just gonna be excited to be out there. She helped me find this 3-bedroom house that was only like $400 a month. So that was dope. And then she did everything for me. Got the furniture for me, and she would go do the grocery shopping. I had brought my dogs with me, so she would walk the dogs. And when I would get home from work, she would run lines with me. And she helped me with the emails. At the time, I had 8,000 emails that I hadn't even checked yet. So she checked all of them. Yeah, I know. 8,000 unread emails, and a lot of them were important. She was like, Tiffany, you've got to check your emails more often. You know you probably missed $20,000 or $30,000 in comedy shows alone. I was like, wait, what? She's like, so many people emailed you about doing shows. Oh, my God, Tiffany, you missed so much money not checking these emails. A lot of them were recent, and I ended up making an additional $4,000 or $5,000 off a few of the emails. When we were in Georgia, it was fun. When we got back to L.A., I told her, look, I'm not working like that anymore, and I don't need an assistant. And she was like, I'll just work anyways. I'll do it anyways. You don't need to pay me. That did not work out. Basically, the next few months was just her questioning what I did and then telling me what to do. She was like, you need to go to bed. I was like, you ain't my mama. Go to bed, Tiffany. You need to go to bed. You gotta go to work tomorrow. Or when I was seeing this basketball player at the time, and she'd be like, you need to make him commit. He needs to make a commitment to you. He ain't your boyfriend, is he? I'm just enjoying him. Leave me alone. I'm going to his game tonight. You don't have time for games. You're busy. You need to call your agent. You need to call your manager. You got a telephone interview at 6. You got a set tomorrow. Just like always telling me what I need to do, which was what I was paying her to do. I mean, she was really good at it. I just had issues with that. So yeah, I had to fire her. We are still friends, but we don't talk about money or my career anymore. It's not awkward though, at least not for me. I know that I do need somebody reminding me what to do. I procrastinate on everything. Like right now, I should have went to the grocery store yesterday to get groceries because I'm cooking for my brother and sisters tomorrow. But I'm like, the grocery store is 24 hours. I'll go get it later. I'll do it later. Then when I get the groceries, it'll be 2 o'clock in the morning and I'll get home. And I know I need to marinate this and do that. And I'm just like, I'll do it in the morning. Then I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I'm still sleepy. I'll do it in a couple of hours. Then everybody will be here and I'll be doing it. Everybody will be waiting for the food and looking at me like, dang, Tiffany, you knew we were coming, didn't you? Okay, so yeah, I got problems, but I don't want to be pestered about them. How to handle backstabbing bitches. My life is pretty good now, but sometimes I run into some motherfuckers and shit goes off. I'll tell you about this one time. Very recently, I was at a wedding. My boyfriend at the time and I were the only black couple there. We looked good, okay? It was all white people and us. Very fancy wedding. Lots of rich people, etc. I went in the bathroom and was sitting in the stall peeing. Then two ladies came in. They must have thought they were alone because they started talking loud. The first one was like, you see that big black butt she got? Oh, yeah. She could not fuck him right. And the other one was like, we'll get her ass out of here some way. We're going to fuck him. We're going to. And for 10 minutes, I heard them say terrible racist shit about me and talk about getting my boyfriend to leave with them. I just sat there quiet. I was listening, getting madder and madder. I was 2 glasses of wine in already, so I was ready to fight these ladies. I sent a text message to Hollywood friend 1 and 2, like, these old bitches at this wedding being racist as hell. I'm about to kick they asses. I'm sorry if I don't see y'all for a while because I'm about to be in jail. Hollywood friend 1 called me immediately. Now, mind you, I'm still sitting in the stall. Tiffany, just leave. Just get an Uber right now and just walk out the door. And I was like, I can't do it. I gotta fight these bitches. I'm not getting off the phone with you until you walk out the door. Just leave. 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 I opened the stall door, still on the phone with Hollywood friend 1. These two bitches gave me a look of shock and horror. They had no idea I was there. So on the phone with my girl, I said, okay, I will leave these fat ass Paula Deen looking bitches to themselves and get the hell out of this wedding. I thought those women were going to straight die. right there in the bathroom. I walked out, got my man, and we left. I was still steaming. And when we got back to the hotel, we had some good sex that night, I'll tell you what. He thought it was funny that they wanted to fuck him.
You should have let them try. I would have put them on blast so bad.
The next day, Hollywood friend 2 saw the text and called me. She stayed on the phone with me for 2 hours telling me about how racism works in Hollywood. She was like, honey child, let me explain. First off, what a blessing that you were able to hear them do it out loud in your face. That's a blessing. I have been through so many experiences where they did it behind my back or they just shut me down. That's what they do. They close you out. Be grateful that you got to hear it live and see it. How is that good? I said. She said, because now you know those two are the enemy. Now you are aware. It's the ones that are sweet in your face and plotting behind your back that you have to worry about. Oh, yeah? I hadn't thought about it that way. She said, the thing that's so sad about this is they do it to each other, too. Even worse. Them white women attack each other, and they go for each other's heads. Just imagine how they did you. Imagine that times 10 on each other. Their racism is not even like racism. It's like sexism. If you're fucking a richer guy or a hotter guy, so now I'm going to destroy you. Yeah, I guess I could see that. Now imagine if you're a black woman and you're fucking a richer guy that they want to fuck. Now they're going to try to destroy you because you're getting the dick that they want and you're getting the money funneled down to you. See, boil it all down. Tiffany, it comes down to money and status. It ain't even about race. It's crazy, but yeah, I could see that. Oh my God, that sounds like some Illuminati shit. But you're right. You're tripping me out. I feel like I'm watching a YouTube video. At the end of the day, Tiffany, you have to be gracious. You have to smile. And when they saying something you don't like, you figure out how to Dallas they ass. Dallas? Girl, yeah, not landing they motherfucking ass. You gotta get like a soap opera. You gotta get down and dirty, but do it classy. Get down and dirty, but do it classy. Let these bitches know you're not afraid to fuck them up. What do you mean? Should I fight? No, not with your hands. That's ghetto. With your words, with your actions, with your thoughts, with your success. You kill them with your success, Tiffany. You kill them with your success, then they'll have to kiss your motherfucking feet. Yeah, I like the sound of that. You do it right, and you're going to have these bitches walking behind you trying to clean your shit up, just like Oprah. You see what Oprah did? Them bitches are licking her ass. You know why? Because she killed them with her success. They've been racist towards her. They've been mean to her. They call her fat, black, Harpo, all that. Yeah, but who's on top? She says, I like watermelon martinis, and boom, everybody drinking watermelon martinis. Tiffany, because Oprah says she liked them. Well, watermelon martinis is pretty good, though. Just stay focused, okay? Stay successful, and you shut these bitches down cleverly. Be smart. Watch these soap operas and stay classy and you'll get there. So now I watch soap operas for ideas on how to handle backstabbing bitches. Hollywood accounting. Me and my accountant get into it all the time. What are you buying from PayPal? You're buying a lot of things from PayPal, but it doesn't say exactly what it is. It's none of your business. Tiffany? I cannot legally write it off your taxes unless you tell me what it is. So I told him about this book. I'm so fucking embarrassed about this, but I have to share it. Maybe it'll help me get past it. This book is basically how to get a man and how to get your ex back or how to get a man to be into you, right? It's by this guy who's like a relationship advisor guy. And to be a member of his thing, it's like $39.99 a month. And you get a book and text messages and stuff. What is this $39.99 a month? What's this for? For my education. It's an educational program. For what? For guys to know men better, to help me in my comedy. I can't write that off. It's relationship stuff. And I talk about relationship stuff in my comedy. I fuss with him about all kinds of things. You can't use a business credit card to buy weed, Tiffany. That's not cool. That's health stuff. It's my medicine. I have a prescription from a doctor so I can ease my back pain and get on stage and perform. So you have to write that off too. I buy too much weird stuff and that pisses him off. I bought a $300 microscope because I'm into science. My accountant said, you can't write off a microscope. It does not affect your business. How does this help your acting or comedy? Well, it helps me with comedy because I talk about bacteria and stuff on stage. And I have to research the bacteria so I'm not giving out false information. He didn't believe me. So he brought his buddy to the comedy show, to my special. And he's like, yep, this is who I was telling you about with the microscope and the seducing men books. I got all angry. Don't tell everybody that. Of course I'm talking about it here, which is worse. But damn, that's my decision to spread my business, not his. Queen Latifah's house party. Queen Latifah had a party at her house and invited me. I asked her if I could bring a couple of my friends, Hannibal Buress and Little Rail Howery. She was like, do they got something to lose? I said, what? She was like, you never invite nobody to your house unless they got something to lose. Well, they're pretty popular entertainers, so I think they got something to lose. She was like, yeah, okay. Well, they're welcome to come, long as they got something to lose. So we all went to her house, and it was 4th of July. She's having a party, and we were drinking and having a good time. All kinds of famous people were there. I was in the pool, standing there, drinking and talking to Lorenz Tate and his brothers. I heard a voice that I recognized. I turned and looked, then turned back to the guys and said, you guys, is that Mary J. Blige or am I tripping? Lorenz Tate was like, nope, that's Mary J. Blige. I started backstroking towards her, all smooth, right? I was like, hey, girl, how you doing? And I just started talking to her. But I was so drunk. Me and my friends, we love your music. We used to bump it all the time. We still be bumping it. And I started singing some of her songs to her, and she was laughing. She was like, girl, what do you do? I got out of the water, but I had been drinking so much that I was bloated. So my swimming suit was crawling up my butt, and it was just looking bad. So I'm trying to dig my swimming suit out my ass, and Mary J. Blige is looking at me all crazy. And I'm like, I know you looking at me crazy, but look, I just signed a modeling contract. She was like, you did? Yep, with Big Lots. I'm a swimsuit model for them. Regular body edition, girl. And she just fell out laughing. You crazy, girl. So Mary offered me a drink. Or maybe 3 or 6. And I don't remember too much after that, but music had come on. I started dancing and stuff. I was just having a good time. But I know eventually that Queen Latifah came over and got me and was like, Tiffany, it's time to go in the house. You tripping. Am I being bad? Girl, your ass is crazy. You need to go in the house. So she took me in the house and I fell asleep immediately. That's right. I fell asleep. I did not pass out. I was just tired. And so I went to sleep. Little Rel and Hannibal put sunglasses on me when I was asleep. They would take turns closing my mouth because my ass was light snoring every time my mouth opened. And it was bothering everyone who was playing games like Taboo and Spades. The next day at the movie set, Queen Latifah was clowning me. Tiffany, You were so funny. You was just dancing all crazy. I haven't seen Mary J. Blige laugh like that in years. I was like, for real? And she was like, you was the only person that was talking to her, besides me and her sister. And Mary said she really enjoyed you. Really? And Jada was like, yeah, girl, it was fun. And I was like, Jada, you was at the party too? They thought that shit was real funny, that I didn't even know Jada was at the party. I guess I slept a lot. A few weeks later, Mary J. Blige's security texts me up. Hey, you need to hang out with Mary more. She going through her divorce and stuff, and she said that you her favorite comedian, that you are so funny. She had such a good time with you. You need to come hang out with us. If my 16-year-old self seen that text, I would have died right there on the curb, dead. But my 35-year-old self had a TV show to film. I had just got back on the Carmichael show, so I couldn't really hang out. I just didn't have the time. So yeah, Mary J. Blige wanted me to come hang out. And I was like, I would love to, but I don't have the time. Sorry, Mary, but for real, hit me up again when you in L.A., girl. I got my Big Lots model money, and we'll do it right. Dave Chappelle. I did a show one time, not in Ohio, in L.A., and Dave Chappelle showed up to the show. When he came off stage, he was like, Tiffany, you're a genius. Dave Chappelle thinks I'm a genius. I wasn't about to let this moment pass by, though. I immediately hit him up. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm trying to work on doing my own show. I'd love for you to be on my show. Or what show you trying to do? It's called Judge Ratchet. I'm the judge, and I'm taking cases that you can't take to real court. Like what? Like if somebody's a dope dealer, and they lose their dope because somebody gets arrested with it or whatever. And then they sue them because they want their money, right? They want the dope back, or they want the money back. Baby mama's tripping. Just really stupid stuff. Stuff you can't take to real court. Ah, that's genius. I'm down to do it. Cool. Perfect. When you gonna be in town? No time soon. I was like, okay. At least he was nice about blowing me off. But now every time I run into him or I see him, he's like, you are so good. You're a genius. He's always telling me I'm a genius. So that makes me feel good. But he didn't ever show up. David's supposed to be all anti-Hollywood, but ain't that about the most Hollywood thing ever? A star promising shit that they don't deliver on? I'm just kidding. I love you, Dave. She ready. How I knew I made it. I knew I made it in Hollywood when I went on the Arsenio Hall show. That's kind of a weird specific marker to be my when I made it story. So let me explain. I remember being a kid watching Arsenio. He was my idol. I remember wishing he was like my dad or big brother or something like that. I would watch every single show, every minute of it. I got in so much trouble for that too, because it came on at 11 at night. I would sneak into the closet and watch him on my little black and white TV. My mom used to beat me out the closet all the time over that. Being a guest on his show was a dream for so long. When he went off the air in 1994, I thought I missed my shot. Then in 2013, he came back on the air. I got so excited. This could be my chance to get on there. And now that I'm a working comedian, I got a real shot, right? Of course, I had to update my fantasy too. Now that I'm older, maybe instead of him being my daddy, he could be my baby daddy. I had a friend who got booked on the show, and he invited me to go with him. I met the talent booker, and she said maybe they could use me for a few sketches. I told her she could use me to clean toilets if it got me on the show. They used me to shoot this sketch called I Married a Black Woman. I gave 110% in that performance. The producers liked it, and they decided to have me come back again. And then for a third time. By the third one, I have been pitching them relentlessly on doing my stand-up, and they finally agreed to book me. I was talking to the producers like, will I finally get to meet Arsenio? The producer was like, yeah, you'll meet him, of course, on the show. When I meet Arsenio, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to jump all on him, and I'm going to kiss him all over his face, and I'm going to tell him that he's my favorite and that I want to have all his babies. And the producer was like, he already has kids. He has a son. Yeah, but he don't have a full black baby, and I could give that to him. The producer was like, okay. And I want to tell him I used to get whippings for him. I used to get in trouble for him. I got beat out the closet for him. I want him to know this. Okay, okay, Tiffany. You'll meet him afterwards. No problem. I was a little crazy, I know, but this was my idol growing up. So the day came, and I was off stage about to go on, and I heard him talking about me. He said something like, this next comedian coming to the stage, guys, not only is she beautiful and funny, but she's smart. I thought I was going to die right there. I swear I was crying. There was tears coming out of my eyes. I was crying with joy. The producer was like, you okay? I looked at her and I said, Arsenio said I was smart and beautiful. Did you not hear that? Oh, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Pull yourself together, girl. You about to go out there. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, that was like the biggest thing in the whole wide world. I remember watching the video of me coming out on stage, and it looks like I was so confident and so self-assured. But inside, I was crying baby tears of joy because Arsenio said I was smart. I did the set, and it was a great performance. But honestly, I don't think I was mentally present for any of it. I was just so, I don't know. Honestly, I was wet thinking about what he said. When I was done, the whole crowd was cheering and clapping, and Arsenio came over to me. In my mind, I was about to jump on him and kiss him all over his face. But he scooped me up and picked me up and held me like a baby. So I guess the producers obviously told him I was going to jump on him. He picked me up like a baby. And I was like, oh, my God. I just started licking his face. I couldn't help myself. I was so happy. Straight up, his face tastes like Ovaltine. I think that's what they use, Ovaltine, for his foundation because he's so chocolatey. I don't know, but it tasted amazing. I ended up being on there 7 times. I came back as a correspondent for him. I would go into the audience and be all over the studio doing different funny things. And people really loved it. But then the show got canceled shortly thereafter. That was the moment that started it all and led to everything. Even this book. That was where I met Tyler Perry. He saw my I Married a Black Woman sketch and he had me come in and audition. Then he hired me for a show. That led to me getting the Carmichael show. From there, I booked movies like Keanu and Girls Trip. I know it all came from me and my hard work, but still, Arsenio Hall gave me a platform to be able to be seen being me. And I'm so grateful to him for that. That was pretty huge. Oh, and it gets better. We went to dinner. We went to a late dinner, and I thought, this was it. I thought, this was going to be my chance. I was single right then. He was single right then. I know he old enough to be my dad, but I don't care. I'll help him raise his son. I'll give him a full black baby. He was saying how he was a foodie. And hey, I like to eat food too. It was a really, really great dinner. And we laughed and had an amazing time. I thought I was going to get a kiss. I thought I was going to come up on something, but no. He just said, let's go out and eat again. I was not aggressive with him because I was trying not to be thirsty like I was in high school and still am sometimes. It was really hard for me not to just blurt out, "What's up with that dick, Arsenio?" I wanted to, but I didn't. I just told him he had very nice hands and that I loved his fingers. That's all I said. I didn't get too thirsty on him, though, but I sure wanted to. Mama. My mom is still alive. She's in a mental institution in Riverside. One time she was arrested. They took her to this place in Norwalk. They were healing her. Whatever medications they was giving her, whatever they was doing, it was like she was normal. I would go see her, and she was my mama. She didn't say anything mean or try to hit me. She hugged me. She held me. We talked. I felt like I was 6, 7 years old again, before the accident. She asked me to get her out of there, so I did. Then she stopped taking her medication, and she went right back to beating my ass and being my crazy mom again. She never hit my brothers or sisters or anything. She might cuss them out, but she didn't hurt them. I asked her about that just recently. "Mom, why are you always trying to fight me, but you don't ever try to fight my siblings? You look just like me, and I don't like that." "So you're beating yourself up?" "I guess so. I don't like that you look like me, though. And you look like your ugly-ass daddy." "Now, you gotta stop saying that, Mama, because he's not ugly. He's not ugly. I've seen him. He's not ugly." "Mm-hmm. Maybe not to you. Not to you either. You opened your legs to the man for 3 years." Then she popped me in the mouth, damn it. I'm 37 years old, still getting popped in the fucking mouth. My goal is to get enough money to buy a duplex. I want to put her in one of the units and hire a full-time nurse to take care of her. Then I want to get her on whatever medication they gave her when she was in Norwalk so she can be my mama again. Honestly, that's all I really want from life. How to survive and thrive in Hollywood. When I was hanging out with Jada in New Orleans shooting Girls Trip, I had a knockoff Michael Kors bag, and the lock fell off. Jada was like, "You need real bags. You can't be running around here with fake bags. What kind of bag is that?" "This is my Martin Luther King bag. The lock fell off, so it's free at last. Get it?" Jada was like, "No, I don't get it. It's a fake. You have to get real designer stuff. You can't be having knockoff stuff." "Well, that's the kind of money I got. Knockoff money. So that's probably what kind of bag I should have, right?" She shook her head and laughed at me. Later that week, she decided to go back to LA for the weekend and invited me to go with her. I was like, "That sounds fun, but how are we gonna book a ticket this late? It'll be too expensive. And I bet first class is filled up." Jada said, "Book a ticket. Girl, we taking a private jet to LA. I was like, "Oh, I can't. I mean, I'm not getting on no private jet." "Why?" "Aaliyah, never forget." "What?" "Aaliyah, never forget. La Bamba, too." Jada was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" "Look, Jada, right when you about to blow the fuck up, when you about to get hella super famous and have hella unlimited amounts of money, that's when you get killed. And it's always in a small plane. Unless there is 10 white people on that flight, I cannot get on that flight." Jada just shook her head and was like, "Something is wrong with your brain." "Girl, your husband said that to me too." When she was in L.A., I posted a picture of myself on Instagram in a dress I thought was nice. Jada hit me up on text. "Get a better dress." She sent me all these links to these designer dresses, but they're like $500. "Jada, I feel very fly in my $85 dress." "Who made it, Tiffany? Who cares? It looks good." "LOL, you keep doing you, Tiffany. Happy face. I'll explain when I get back." She came back from L.A., and she gave me this nice bag. It had this huge picture of a barking dog on the side. It was mean looking, okay? I was like, "What's up with the dog?" Jada's like, oh, I know you can't afford security, so this should keep the mopes off you.
Thank you, Jada. That is so sweet. She left the price to